Welcome to another episode of the Brown Couch Bruhs. Let's toast it up, my brother.
Here we go.
Another episode. We are here back in the studio. Actually, we're in a brand new studio today. We are at Motown Motivated Studios in the old Durfee Middle School.
The Double M's.
And so, trying out a brand new studio today. Here with Motown Motivated, excited about our new home. What you think so far?
Listen, man, I like the studio. I like the acoustics. I like the guys we working with. And like I always say, we gonna bring some bangers to Brown Couch Bruhs.
Let's go. Well, hey, let's start it off with a tip off. Let's tip it off.
Tip it off. Throw it up in the air and see who win the tip.
Here we go. So another week in sports. What you think?
Good week in sports. I want to start off, of course, with fantasy. Me and you went head up.
We did.
I end up tap.
It didn't actually go the way that I thought it would. Just didn't have a whole lot of production for my team. Took an L. I think this is number 3 in a row for me.
I've won 5 in a row. I'm sitting up there 7-1.
That's nice.
D-Web's world, 7-1.
That's nice. Hey, Michigan State U of M football game. What you think?
Hey, little brother smack big brother in the mouth once again. Until they get it right up there in Ann Arbor, man. And Mel Tucker got something going up in there. So
I told you.
Be aware.
Yeah, we were on the phone. I told you. I said, anytime somebody rushes for 5 touchdowns, you don't deserve to win the game.
That is true. And then on the other perspective from the Michigan standpoint, you got a hot quarterback up in there, got through for almost 400 yards, and you want to switch in, switch out. Like somebody said it best the other day. I think I can't remember who said it, but Ohio State, and I got to reference them, they had 3 running backs, and they were trying to decide who was going to be the starting running back. And the guy said, it didn't take this guy 3 games. It took a guy 3 weeks, 3 plays to say, Travion Henderson is our guy. And the other 2 guys, you know, they backups.
Right. And clearly, you know, you look at a program like Michigan, you know, they're going to roll out Jim Harbaugh again. He's going to have a job as long as he wants. He's not going to be on the hot seat. But when you look at that guy's coaching career, particularly at the University of Michigan, talk about his signature wins. There are none. You can't name 1 signature win that this coach has had since he's been the head coach at U of M.
You can't name one, but I guess what I would say if I was a fan of Jim Harbaugh is who you going to bring in that's going to do what he's done. And you got to get out of that Michigan man mentality if you want to bring in some top-notch coaches, some young, innovative coaches with a different mindset. But as of right now, I mean, Harbaugh is the best they got. I mean, the guy went 8, 9, 10 games a year. If that's your standard, he's going to bring that to the table. But I don't see nobody coming down the chute to take that position or then offer the job to nobody else.
Well, when you have a program like Michigan State who goes out and gets a Mel Tucker, and if there are guys out there who can command a team, who can lead men, who may not be quote-unquote Michigan guys, you got to take a look at that. Because this can't sit well with U of M fans or with U of M alumni right now. No signature wins in the past 5, 6 years. I don't know how long Jim Harbaugh has been there. But it's really nothing to write home about, nothing to be proud of if you are a U of M fan.
No signature wins. And, of course, when you just mentioned alumni, I know some personally that I talk to on the regular via Facebook Messenger, and they're not happy with the program. But, hey, Michigan paying the money is Michigan, so, hey, you go as they go, as they say, you go as our ball.
Hey, he'll have a job as long as he wants. Our number one pick, Cade Cunningham, made his debut. Not a stellar performance, either performance from him this week. He goes 2 points a couple of days ago. Then he goes for another, makes a couple of shots. He's like 0 for 14 or something crazy from the 3, which is a little disappointing, particularly when you see the kid out in Houston. You see Jalen Green putting on a show against LeBron and the Lakers the other day. So talk a little bit about what you think Kay Cunningham's going to do.
You know what? I'm not going to get down on Kay this early in the season. They won at 6. He didn't have any preseason, didn't have any really too much training camp. He coming off an injury. I'm going to give the kid a break. You know, let's revisit this probably at the halfway point. You know, get a kid a chance to learn the NBA lifestyle, road trip, coming home, getting healthy, eating healthier. And, you know, kid might not be in the greatest shape, but, you know, I'm going to lay low on K right now.
Yeah, okay, so we'll give him a pass because it's only game two for him right now. But we certainly don't want him to fall in line with other disappointing number one picks. And when you're a number one pick in the NBA, you know, you got to be able to bring something to the table, something that people can depend on every time they watch you play.
Agreed.
And so what is this guy going to be? Is he going to be a scorer? Is he going to be a rebounder, an assist guy? You know, what is he going to bring to the table? What can we count on each and every game from this guy? And that remains to be seen. Let's see, you know, what kind of player he's going to be. I'll tell you one thing. He's less likely to eat himself out of house and home like your boy Zion Williamson.
Oh, he looks terrible.
Man, this guy looks like a middle linebacker, nose tackle in the NFL right now. 300 pounds plus and hadn't touched the floor yet. This guy's probably 2 months away from really playing in a serious NBA game.
I agree. I seen a picture of him the other day, and you're exactly right. He's 6 to 8 weeks for even competing in the NBA. Same with your boy James Harden. He's out of shape. He's complaining about fouls. But you got to get in shape to get your calls.
Yeah.
You got to come out there with some sustainability to get the calls. And right now, he's out of shape. Definitely the guy we just mentioned, he's out of shape. So, you know, it's a business.
It is.
You know, so, and those owners, they take it serious. So, yeah.
We'll see what happens. All right, high school football. High school football is kicked off. The playoffs is kicked off. I know you got a chance to go see King play the other day.
No, Cass. Cass played the other day. And that's really the only team I've been following, really. You know, Cass, they lost a heartbreaker to Dearborn Forest in that Forest in 17-14, winning in overtime. I know King did their thing over there. West Bloomfield and Belleville took care of business. So from that standpoint, that's all I got for you for high school football. Those four guys right there, those four teams, are really the main ones I'll be focusing on.
Be good to see a PSL team play for a state championship again.
Right,
like we had with King and Cass a few years ago. I mean, they're always right there. But those are only two schools we can really look out for in the PSL to kind of make it far and do, you know, make some noise in the state playoffs.
King, yeah, you got to follow King. Oops.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, we got a guest today.
Got a guest
today in the Brown Couch Bruh studio. We welcome today our brother Eric Pate.
Eric E.P. Pate.
I'm going to shoot that yo for all the good noobs out there, man. I'm with the Qs. They gave me a red cup.
We came with the red cup, man.
Maybe we'll talk about the contents of it later. It's not that purple drink, though. But I'll tell you this. It's that cap of punch or whatever it is. But, hey, man, I'm just glad to be here, man. Thank you guys for having me on. I'm with the Qs tonight, man.
Well, listen, you know, we glad to have EP on. Like I said earlier when he went Facebook Live, if you're going to have a guy talking about sports, why not have a guy who's embedded in the city, invested in the city, came up east side, west side. He's, you know, been everywhere. So, yeah, we got the guy on there. We got the man, the myth, the legend, the ultimate scroller, Eric Pate.
That's right, man.
We're glad to have you here, brother.
Thank you for having me. And T. Martin, man, hey, thank you for that protection when I was over in DPSCD. So, if I had on, I'd take it off to you, raise my glass to Damon.
One thing about
Damon, look, way back when I lived on Stahelin, he brought a kid buying a Steeler in his West Side Steeler uniform.
And you're little right, did right.
Damon what? Damon Jr.?
Damon Jr.
Did we know this young
9
man,
years old.
NFL, CFL, first of all, the Ohio State University, Cass Tech, and then you know what? I ran into him one time, and I said, "Man, Eric Pate, man, the guy that came, you came over his house at Halloween." Dame looked at me like, "Who the hell are you?" And I said, "Man, it's me, man, the guy."
Right, you were actually outside.
Yeah.
You know, it was trick or treat.
Yeah, it was trick or
Halloween,
treat. Man.
Around
Halloween.
This time.
I was giving out candy, yep, man, doing it, and this kid walked up, and now he's a pro, man. And you know what? I beam when you show those highlights on your Facebook page.
I appreciate
and
that.
And you know what, man? He had a great college career.
Yeah.
Got a national championship, right?
National championship, several couple of Big Ten championships. And got his degree. Let's get that out there.
Yeah.
Got his degree.
Absolutely.
And then you know what he did? everything was going good, and he turned left instead of going right. 1911. He went the wrong way. He went the wrong way like his dad, man.
We'll put him right in the middle of the cow.
That's right.
Hey. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. But I'm going to say this. You know, you guys were talking a little bit about high school football, and let's have a moment of silence for the Pershing Doughboys who – crawled into the playoffs.
They in the state playoffs?
And crawled out. Hold on. Moment of silence.
Okay,
basketball season. All right,
basketball season. Basketball season is around the corner.
45 days away.
That is where you will excel, no question about it. Man. But one of the premises of our show is really highlighting the Detroit born and bred athletes and influencers in sports in this area. And certainly, Eric, you are one of them. A big-time Persian guy, no question about it. Marygrove College, and it really has had your career here, right here in the city of Detroit. And we want to give you your flowers here and now while you are here. And really just let you know how much we appreciate you. You're a mainstay. You're a name in the sports world here in this area, and that is to be commended. So tell us a little bit about your upbringing, where you're from, what neighborhood you grew up in. Let's start there.
Well, guys, again, thank you. Flowers, and I'll be 58. I know we're taping this November the 5th.
There we go.
But right. I'll say I'm an Eastsider, all the way, tried and true. Neighborhood is Cadillac Heights, really Hawthorne Park, Conic Gardens.
Okay.
Right. I grew up at Hawthorne Recreation Center where Roy Haywood, older brother Spencer Haywood, taught me the game of basketball.
Wow.
At a young age, ended up going over to Pershing High School because my aunt attended Pershing and cheerleader, all those good things. And I can remember being at Pershing High School at a very young age. Mm. And it just so happens, I ended up getting accepted at Cass Tech. Well, I hit a dude with a chair and got a 45-day suspension, got kicked out of Cass. Just when you start getting used to Cass Tech, for those folks out there, you get there in the ninth grade, if you poor like we were, you sharing clothes with your brother. The no-collar shirts were out. Mm. He'd wear it one day. I'd wash it, wear it the next day so I could fit in at Cass. Mm. It was very intimidating as a ninth grader.
And we're talking, what, 5,000 students?
Oh, man.
4,500?
Yes. In the pickle factory, in the old pickle factory at the big old-school Cass Tech. Then the 10th grade, you started to get a little comfortable, might talk to a few girls, go to a few parties. 11th grade, I was comfortable, but I was too comfortable. Mm. I was doing crazy stuff. I hit a guy with a chair, man. Wow. And Terrence, as an educator and somebody like you, Dame, that coached, I mean, think about that. And to see, I'm able to tell kids now as I'm in education that I'm not perfect. A lot of times administrators talk from the mountaintop viewpoint. I can come down that valley with you because I know what it was like to have 45 days sitting at the crib in 1979.
You didn't go to school for 45 days?
45 days, man, and he could have prosecuted me.
Wow.
And I used to see the guy up at Michigan State that I hit with the chair, guys. And I'm going to tell you, I ended up at Osborne. My brother's best friend got murdered. I saw it and was a witness in the trial.
Wow.
And the guys at Osborne chased me out of Osborne. I ran to the office, and I told the principal at the time, Marvin Evans, who happened to be a noob. Didn't know he was a brother because I wasn't it's high school. I'm a high school student.
I got a story about
Marv Evans. Yeah. Man, and I love to hear because he helped me, man. He sent me immediately over to Pershing where my brother was. We were in the same grade. We were 11 months apart.
Wow.
And end up at Pershing, and I was still clowning. But the third week of school, I had a fight. I was part of a gang fight. We fought all the way. If you're familiar with that building, from the third floor out the door. Mm-hmm. And the principal at the time was George Q. Williams, but the assistant principal was Paul Onika. And it's amazing, I remember these names, and Dr. Scott. They were preaching to us and telling us this, that, and the third, but they told me this. Mr. Onika, he pointed his finger, he said, one more incident, and you out of all Detroit public schools. My father came up, he was a Michigan Bell telephone installer, God rest his soul, collared me in that office and kicked my behind. Now, I was sports writer for 20 years, fast forward through U of D, Marygrove and all the newspaper stops I made, 2000, I get into education. I'm a certified teacher. Then I ascend to become an assistant principal in administration and now at Romulus. But when I stopped at Pershing, I had a breakdown in office because I sat on the bench where I nearly got kicked out of all DPS schools. And I cried, I sobbed because the people at Pershing embraced me. The counselor, Starlene, had me. All the folks there, even Mathis Epps, the late, great Mathis Epps, who was the coach, of the football team and all those folks over at Pershing just wrapped their arms around me and sent me to a journalism workshop, Marilyn Williams, in 1980. The summer of 1980 changed my life.
Wow.
And so people wonder why I love Pershing and why I love DPS. Mm. And that's why. So I'm an East Sider from 7 Mile in DeQuinder, Hawthorne Rec. A lot of people have touched me, and I just try to reach back and touch them. I've covered 5 Super Bowls, 3 Final Fours.
Wow.
A lot of major events in my sports writing career. Worked at WDFN, which was the best job in the world. I didn't know what the hell I was thinking when I went to education. Because I had a job where you work for 3 hours, maybe 4, go home, and then you could sleep, then do an appearance at night, get paid for that. What the hell was I thinking? After 9/11, they played me, you know, and they took me off full time and made me part time. And I did that, and it was the Ohio State-Michigan game in 07. I was teaching at Inkster, and I'm working at DFN on the weekends. T. Martin and Dame, I said, what can I curse on this thing?
I said,
and I resigned in 2007, and I have not been a full-time media person since.
Right.
But I lost my desire for it because I was getting played. When Stoney and Wojo was making 6 figures, I was making an hourly salary.
Wow.
And it just pained me. The highest money I made there was 5 figures. Those dudes were making 6 figures. And I felt like, yeah, they're in the PM drive spot, but I was bringing a lot to that station. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, we have to fight for what we get. And so education has been very fulfilling. It is the best job in the world. I love where I'm at. I spent my time at Detroit Public Schools. How often do you get to work at your damn alma mater?
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'm out working Pershing, man.
That's amazing, man. And I think one of the pieces that I take from that story is sometimes as a troubled kid, you just need one person to believe in you to turn your life around. Mm. Just one person believing you to turn your life around. And I think you got that at Pershing.
Yes, Marilyn Williams. Mm. Beautiful lady. I saw her about 3 years ago at Bosco in the summertime. And we took a little picture. And Marilyn Williams used to date Ricky Green. I think they got a kid together or whatever.
Ricky Green, he played at Michigan.
Ricky Green with the big afro.
Right.
And man, I didn't realize, like, Miss Williams was probably 5 to 7 years older than me at the time. But she was, you know, a beautiful lady.
You had
man.
A crush on her.
I had a crush. I was like, damn. You know how it is. Come on, y'all. Y'all know. If you had a fine teacher, you knew, hey, Miss Glenn at Cass taught me Spanish. I don't think adios. I know probably one word of Spanish. But Miss Lynn was my Spanish teacher, man. I had failed French. So Spanish was the only option.
She must have been ugly.
Man. Madame Crone was ugly.
Right.
But this doggone Miss Glenn, Miss Williams saved my life at Pershing. And Starlene Hammy, my counselor. Ann Conley. I can't not mention Ann Conley, who graduated ironically from high school with my auntie. Mm. And the Pershing thing just really, I mean, Pershing saved my life. Of all, the third school now.
Right.
Saved my life. And you're right, T. Martin. When people wrap their hands, it takes one person. Maybe it's a coach. Maybe it's a teacher. Maybe it's the hall monitor. Maybe it's a police officer. Right. Maybe it's the assistant principal. Someone to wrap their hands around you say, you can be whoever you want to be and give you that belief. And college was just, I played college basketball having not played any varsity sports. I'm talking about none. In high school. Made the basketball team at little old Mary Grove College, lived on campus. My mother put me out, God rest her soul. Labor Day of 81, after smoking and drinking all summer, smoking weed and drinking beer, 40 ounces for the production crew, they real young, drinking that 40 ounces until the suds come up, you know? And my mother, Labor Day of 81, locked the screen door, pulled the phone on the porch and said, you live at Mary Grove. She said, you better call Peanut and have him come back and pick you up and take you up to the dorms. And I didn't go back home after that.
Wow.
I grew up. 313-891-7172, that was Peanut's number. Wow. I had to call Peanut, wait 30 minutes for him to come back to the house on Monart to take me up to Mary.
I want to revisit something you said about Mr. Evans, Marvin Evans. It's just funny how the world works, because we were talking about my son earlier, when Halloween, trick-or-treating, and you passing out candy, and then 15 years later, he was at 10 at the time. Now he's doing his thing, and you remember my son. Well, Mr. Evans, I grew up next door to Mr. Evans. Michael and Marvin Evans.
What?
On Marlowe.
Good noobs.
Those were my grandmother and grandfather. They grew up right next door.
What?
And me, Michael, Marvin, Leon Maynard,
yeah.
We all grew up right over there off of Marlowe. And I can remember Mr. Evans and his wife, Miss Evans. She was an educator. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she was assistant principal at Northwestern at one time, but Mr. Evans and he used to be up at the Bally's on Chicago and Telegraph working out. And I used to talk to Mike all the time and Marlon. Of course, he changed his name. I think his name is Dante
yes,
now.
Dante.
Yeah. But it just shows you how small the world is. I grew up right next door to Mr. and Mrs. Evans.
You blowing my mind right there, now. Man. And to think, I ran that office. That day, I remember, dude showed me a .38 revolver at Osborne High School. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to kill it. That's the nigga right there that's, can I say? Yeah. Had the gun.
We'll bleep it out.
Had the pistol. And said, there he is right there, man. That's testifying against us. Because I was a witness in the trial.
Wow.
Killed my brother's best friend, man. On Lloyd. Changed my life. Those are the kind of things that happen that are tragic. And we talk about trauma sensitive and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I started thinking about that. All the trauma that the neighborhood experienced, my brothers have experienced, I've experienced. We think back on your past, all the people who've died when you were a teenager. In Canton and Plymouth, they bring out counselors. In Detroit, man, sorry for your loss. You might get an RIP T-shirt and keep rolling. And kids have to talk about that.
Yeah, our kids are way too desensitized to trauma. And that's certainly one of the issues that we're constantly dealing
mental
with in this area.
No
question about it. Yeah. I want to talk about a couple of things. One, ask you about, you know, just where did you develop your love for sports? One, and then you talked a little bit about how you got to Marygrove, being kicked out of your house by your mom. But, you know, I used to coach at Marygrove.
Wow.
Years ago.
With Dave Sickerman.
Yeah. I was there for 4 years with that program. One of the hidden jewels, I think, in the city could have been really a longstanding, really good quality program for a number of years as a place where Detroit kids can go and play at the next level. But, you know, unfortunately, the school is closed down now. But talk about how you develop your love for sports and then, you know, what your time at Marygrove was like.
Man, oh, man. Let me say this. Let's have a moment of silence for Marygrove College. We good.
All right.
Listen, I stayed at Florence Gillette Hall,
mm-hmm.
and Marygrove at the time was probably 7-8-1 men to women. So this was kind of like a tryout. And mind you, we practiced at Immaculata, the old Immaculata High School, which became Bates. We'd walk across the parking lot and be right there at our home gym. 25 guys probably tried out. And mind you, you taking full credits. It gave me the college experience. Mm-hmm. Not like when you guys were Covington on the staff when you were there.
Yep.
Craig Covington, all you guys had was DJ Foster on your team?
No, I was there a few years after he had left.
And I mean, I'm talking about some talented, I forget the kid from Southeastern, Ballard or Bullard or whatever his name was, that was a dunking machine. We had guys who literally, whoever made the tryout was on the squad.
Mm-hmm.
I got a picture in my phone, I'll show it to you before we leave.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a great experience, man. And you know what ended my career? Pledging.
Mm-hmm.
Norm White, who used to coach at Benedictine.
He coached me at Benedictine.
Are you serious, man? Yep. See how small the world is? Folks, 6 degrees of separation. That's all it is.
That's all it
is. Young producers out there, okay, they looking at me all grim. Listen, guys, it is, what I'm saying is, look at how close. It just takes a few, you know, few people. We're all connected. So Norm White said, man, what you want to be, man? You want to be a Marygrove Mustang or you want to be a Kappa? And I chose the Kappas. And I moved down to U of D and went to school there because I was taking classes there anyway, my communications.
So you moved on campus major. There?
Yeah, I moved on campus there.
Yeah.
I never went back home after mama put me out at 17 because she did it for my own good. God rest her soul.
Right.
Bottom line is that Marygrove experience was one of the best experiences. Now, mind you, one of the first days there, an English professor wrote on my paper, this is not college level. And in red ink.
Mm-hmm.
And Marygrove is small enough where your classes are 15, 7, 16, 17 to 1. And it taught me a lot about work ethic because college was different than high school.
Mm-hmm.
High school, you can wait till the last minute to turn stuff in. college, no. And this was back in the typewriter days. We didn't have computers now. We're typing and white out and staying up all night and things of that sort. Marygrove was just a great experience. 25 guys tried out for this team. And when I saw my name on that sheet, I got some confidence.
Because not having played high school basketball at all.
And you made the squad. Yeah.
Cass Tech, cut. Pershing, didn't even think about it. Because it's always 20 guys. Y'all remember how the PSL used to be. Mm-hmm. Man, and even the Catholic League. There's 20 guys in the hallway that could have been on somebody's varsity.
Mm-hmm. We had Matt McKenzie all day, all night.
Man, my brother always, he still, talk about drama. My brother played in middle school. He played at Pershing. But when it's time to get moved up, he didn't get moved up. It still messes with him today.
Wow.
Still messes with him today. And that's how competitive things were in the PSL. That was when the PSL had pros. You had guys who were two lockers away from you that went. Kevin Willis was a pro, 21 years.
Right.
Graduated in 1980 from Pershing High School. That's how deep the talent pool was. So to get to Marygrove, have a college experience where you're a student athlete, okay? Whether it be NAIA, whether it be Division I, Division II, that's the thing I cherished. And so I got one or two pictures and some box scores from my days of playing college ball. And that's an experience I cherish. Because now, like you said, T. Martin, Marygrove could have been a gym. Now it's a DPSCD property, and I love that. But I can't even go on that campus because it meant so much to me to have that experience. I went from the east side to the west side, but I went away to college, and I grew up there.
It offered a lot of kids in this area who may not have been Division I or Division II kids, but were quality athletes, quality ball players, and were able to play at the next level. It offered them another opportunity to play some quality college basketball. I mean, the years that I was there, we played Eastern, we played Central Michigan, we played some quality competition. And so those kids had an opportunity to really compete. And it was local. It was almost like another HBCU. We had so many, African-American kids on that campus, a very small campus, more of a commuter school. But we did have a dorm, and a lot of kids from the Detroit area, really from the metro Detroit area, were there on that campus. And it was just a great environment for local kids to be involved in.
And when you speak of a lot of kids on that campus, and you mentioned UAD, and we get back to Greek life, our chapter, Tau Kappa Kappa, we reactivated that chapter up there at Marygrove, along with the Chi Gamma chapter at UAD. I guess they call them city chapters now, or however they want to roll it. But we got a chapter up at Marygrove. We got the chapter at UAD, which is called Chi Gamma. So we gave African-American men an opportunity to join fraternities, particularly Omega Psi Phi fraternity. So Marygrove and UAD, they combined their resources, and we was able to accomplish some things.
And see, that's the same thing with Kappa Alpha Psi. I'm the first guy, April 7th, 1984, to ever pledge out of Marygrove College.
Wow. So
there's another guy, T.J. Upshaw, who you may know, who played at Cass Tech, played football at Cass, went to Saginaw Valley, but came down here in 2010 and went over. But that whole thing about the Black Greek life, Kappa Alpha Psi changed my life too. That was another experience that really changed my life. And I was wild, acting a damn fool, doing some crazy stuff. I got kicked off the dorms at UAD and ended up on Myers, 19327 Myers Road, living with some noobs that helped raise me too in about 85. So picture this, I cross in 84, quit the basketball team probably May of 84, end up moving on the dorms at UAD, and then staying there probably for a year, and then getting kicked off the dorms and going to live on Myers for a year and graduate from college in May of 86.
Wow.
So, I was still a knucklehead.
You had a full plate.
Man, a full plate.
Full plate of foolishness
and acting a good dog fool.
Right,
disappointing my mother all the way and my father, But somehow, some way, God kept his hands around me, and people, the noobs, helped raise me too, because it was a noob that's gone now, Joseph Lloyd, who pledged in 83. And ironically, he spent some time in the joint. He spent 5 years, or no, I think 6 or 7 years, armed robbery. And they had him up in Marquette.
Okay.
And he came down here, and they put him on line in 83. And the brother died at probably about it's been about 7 years. Wow. But he took me in his place, and a brother named Hillary Edwards. Mm-hmm. Those guys helped raise me. So just along the way, my journey, as I tell you guys, I had some good people that have poured into my life. So it's just it's only right that I pour into some other young people's lives.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's significant. I mean, you talk about a guy in yourself, didn't play high school sports, but go on to college to play in college. Mm-hmm. Don't finish playing sports there, but you quit the team. And then you end up writing about sports. How did that happen?
What a love, man. That summer of 80 changed my life. That urban journalism workshop at Olivet College, where they had the biggest mosquitoes ever. What you would do is you spend 3 weeks up there, and you go to, they had trained professionals, a lady named Donna Britt, who worked for the Free Press. Marilyn Williams sent me up there. But Donna Britt, her brother Bruce Britt, I think he worked for the LA Times, and some other folks, Luther Keith was at the Lansing State Journal, I think, either that or the Lansing Bureau.
He still writes, doesn't he?
Yeah, he writes, but he also runs Rise, which is a nonprofit.
Oh, okay, okay. And, I heard his name.
Yeah, but yeah. Luther rose to the editorial board at the Detroit News. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line was I was exposed to a lot of good people in that three-week period. And I left high school knowing what I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And to get the opportunity to write for the student newspaper at U of D, I chased the dream. I chased it. Even now, writing a dissertation that I defended in 2019 and doing the edits, no one can tell me that I can't write. Mm-hmm. And that's a stigma that's out there about a lot of young black males. So the whole journalism piece, it really, I became captivated by it in 80. In the summer of 80, I worked for the Pershing Times, too. I need to mention that, the student newspaper, which gave me the opportunity to cover high school Pershing basketball team. 81 was a great year for them. They made the city playoffs. Football team made the city playoffs. Mm-hmm. And I'm covering this like a beat writer. And it gave me a vision, like a prelude to the future, so to speak. And when I got to college, I was able to cover U of D basketball. And all the sports, track, that's what got how I got involved in Cap Alpha Psi, being interested. Because a couple guys, Lawrence Swift, whose brother Dennis Swift, went to McKenzie. You might know Dennis.
I know Earl Swift.
Earl. That's what I'm talking about. Earl. Yeah, Sigma. He's Sigma.
Yeah. And
all of them are Lawrence's little brothers. Mm-hmm. Lawrence and
Earl came out a couple years before me.
Yeah, and Steve Crutchfield were members of Cap Alpha Psi.
Okay.
And I wrote stories about them.
Dang, small world,
yeah,
man.
And then let me tell you this. Jesse Jackson was running for president. This is what took me over the top. And he came to U of D and spoke in 83. And he said, and I want to give a shout out to the members of Cap Alpha Psi. Because they were his escorts on the campus.
Okay.
And I said, look at these boys. Because there weren't any cues. Because y'all had an incident in the 70s that banned them.
I think we had incidents in the 50s, 60s, 70s,
80s, 90s. Yeah. I told you, I said this before we went on. I don't know a paper cue.
Right.
I know some paper capitals, and I'm going to confess that. But I don't know any cues that are written in.
But the noobs took care of Brother Jackson.
Oh, you took care of him.
On the yard.
They took care of him, and that was impressive to me. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, that's the mind you, I didn't like any of these organizations when I first got to college. Now, think about it. You're a city kid. You're going to a city school. You're used to the gang culture. And you find a way not to like the other brothers. So I used to have a basketball team in Mary Grove, white boys included. Mm-hmm. We walking into the Alpha party. We ain't paying.
Right.
And we try to walk in there, and the Alphas turn the lights on, call the campus police. We scatter all through the party. But that was my attitude coming into college. I still was a knucklehead. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, man, I was really excited about Cap Alpha Psi. Mm-hmm. And the writing piece really got involved. I was first black sports editor on the campus. I rose to become the assistant editor
at
U of D. Wow. At the Varsity News. Mm.
Yo, Varsity News is still there.
The Varsity News,
Varsity
man.
News is still there.
It used to be in the clock, where the clock is, where the clock tower.
Tower.
They used to have a office right there in the clock tower. We used to play Eddie Murphy's Party all the time and lay the paper out. Me and Dave Knotts. who was the editor-in-chief at the time when I was the assistant editor.
Oh, that's some history. Of course, I'm employed there, so that's some history.
Great time, man. Yeah. If I could go back to 85, let me take a drink, make me back up. Take me back to 85.
While you're taking a drink, taking yourself back to 85, I wanted to ask you, after a long career of in journalism, writing for a number of different publications, you decide that it's no longer for you, or it decides that you are no longer for it. You come back to education. You come to education, rather. What really brought that about, and what do you think your experiences previous in journalism and in school yourself, experiences that you were able to bring to kids here in the city of Detroit through education?
Man, T. Martin, great question. 9/11 brought me to education. Mm. There were some cuts at the radio station. I was working at WDFN at the time. And mind you, I substitute taught during the off seasons when I was covering the Detroit Lions back in the 90s.
Yeah, we got to touch on that real quick. We talked about that before.
Yeah.
Well, we can go, but go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so after 9/11, they made some budget cuts, and they took me from a full-time position down to part-time. And 9/11 became the excuse, just like the pandemic, for a lot of things to be sliced. Mm. And, you know, who dies in the movie? The black guy, all the time. And I was the black guy. So I went from full-time, making some really nice money, $90,000, down to, I think I made $35 an hour. Mm. And I had to survive. I had to do something. I was working at the Chronicle. The Michigan Front Page had just come out. I was a sports editor there. Sam Logan, may he rest in peace. What a great guy he was, leading the Michigan Chronicle. So I had to reinvent myself. And black men, we know what that's like, because we don't get these jobs where you work 30 years and you get that company watch and they have a ceremony for your black ass. No, that did not happen to me. Okay, so I went into education. I had to humble myself, go to community college and take classes. Went to Mary Grove, obtained my master's in the art of teaching, as well as a minor in history, became a history teacher, had to pass the certification test, history, and I ended up taking the social studies RX, which means you could teach every subject under the moon, and they said it's the second hardest certification test in the state of Michigan. Got into education, man, and Inkster High School came about, and I was there from like 06 to about 2010, 2011, had a great time in Inkster. Met some great guys. Greg Carter, a McKenzie guy. Longtime coach at DePores. Went over to Inkster. Changed the culture of that place. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Greg yesterday. What a great person he is.
Get Coach Carter on here.
Man, a living legend. A Hall of Famer.
A Hall of Famer.
And Inkster was great. Inkster was one of those things, man, where it was Eastside High on steroids. Mm-hmm. It was black everything. Blackly, black, black, black. It was just the best thing because we had great athletics. Kids were winning state titles. We had band. We had choir. We had a dual enrollment program that was out of sight. But most importantly, we had good classroom instruction. Those kids mean a lot. And I'm saying this because 3250 Middle Belt has been torn down and Inkster is without a school. But that was 12 years ago. But it's still one of my best experiences in education. Mm. And that led me to, after that I go to Pershing and was a classroom teacher in social studies. Then I go to, I think I went to River Rouge. Then I got hired as the athletic director and assistant principal at Pershing under the EAA. Mm. And then I worked at a charter, got fired. And then I went to Wayne Risa. Then came back to DPSCD. Now it's DPSCD. I'm with Cody. Enrollment goes down. I go to Marquette, which leads us over to now I'm at Romulus High School as the assistant principal, athletic director, working for a guy named Seth Petty. And I'm talking about that's Isaiah Thomas and I'm Joe Dumars. Mm-hmm. We work well together, man. He's a coolie guy, too. COOLEY, coolie, 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 had with the finest women. They had the finest women on the west side. Man, cool.
Now,
beautiful women.
I have to, I can attest to that, being a McKenzie Stags alum.
Hey.
Cooley, they always had.
Let's raise a glass to the women at Cooley. You right from there. Benedictine, y'all had some bad. These were them bad women at Cooley, baby. Not Cody, but Cooley.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just T, D-Web, man, I've had a great ride, man.
Yeah.
How many guys can say they've covered 5 Super Bowls, 3 Final Fours, a lot of big sporting events, big fights, things of that nature. Then you reinvent yourself going to education.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
If God hit struck me down today, I'm going to look in that casket and I'm going to be smiling.
Yeah.
Because the insurance money is paid. My daughter, Brittany, is going to get paid.
Right, everybody's going
to
get paid.
She going to have to argue with Brittany, but she going to get some money.
Out.
She going to get some money. Everybody going to get paid. But I tell you this, man, it's been a great ride.
Ooh.
Great ride, and lived all over the place. Lived in I started off in Flint at the Flint Journal, worked in Grand Rapids where they paid me by the story. Sports editor Bob Becker wrote a letter for me to get hired in Fort Wayne at the Journal Gazette. I go to St. Pete at the St. Petersburg Times in Florida. Go to Minneapolis to the Star Tribune. In 1994, I came back here to cover the Lions. I got to cover Barry Sanders for 4 seasons.
Speaking of the Lions,
before we go to the Lions, I want to talk. People who know you really know you as a Persian guy.
Yeah.
You are a doughboy and a doughboy for life. And I have to say, you know, we talk a lot about the Cass and the Kings of the world. But Persian, in terms of a neighborhood school, has been one of the most competitive programs for an extremely long time, at least as long as I could remember. When I was at Benedictine, after winning the Catholic League Championship, we played Persian in Operation Friendship. And this wasn't just your average Persian team. This is Willie Mitchell, Ty Bergen, Carlos Williams, RIP to Carlos. Mm-hmm. Great teams. Teams will go on to win state championships. Talk about your time at Persian. Talk about the competitive nature there. I can remember, you know, playing against them, it was like it was 6 or 7 guys out there on the floor, the way that they guarded the ball. But talk about Persian, man. Talk about the prowess and the history, rich history with that program.
Man, I tell you what, if you cut my wrist right now, I guarantee you it'd be royal blue and gold blood streaming down my wrist and dripping down, just like you love McKenzie and just like you love Benedictine. My Cass Tech people still think Cass is so big, they still think I graduated in 81. Mm-hmm. I didn't graduate in 81, y'all. I graduated from Persian. Shout out my sans, Chris McGee. You smoked that weed on the 8th floor. You taught me how to smoke that weed in 77. Turned out to be my sans. Cass Tech, that's fine. Big green machine. I'm a Persian doughboy, man. Pershing means so much to me.
Mm-hmm.
And to have the opportunity, like I said before, to work there on 2 different occasions, do all the things that, first of all, at Pershing, there were 20 guys. I'm telling you, man, we talked about it. We had our 40th class reunion.
Mm-hmm.
There's a brother, man, George Hillsman, who used to play baseball and basketball. He didn't make the varsity just like my brother. I think they both got cut at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
He slides into second base with his toothpick in his mouth.
Mm.
I mean, Milt McCrory, world champion. Yes.
Yeah.
Steve McCrory, Olympic gold medalist, RIP.
Right, rest in peace, Steve.
Darnell Hall, Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer Haywood, Ralph Simpson. Ralph Simpson grew up around the block from me on Russell Street. Spencer Haywood, when they came from Mississippi, his brother ended up working at Hawthorne Rec, Roy Haywood. I was fortunate enough to rebuild our neighborhood park. They tore the building down and we made a Hawthorne Park. We put a rock in the middle of the field and we put 3 names in there: Cloyd Leon Hearns, Gloria Foster, who is like a mother to me, and Roy Haywood. Roy Haywood is the only lone survivor of those 3, but they saved the neighborhood. I mean, LK Sconeys was out, BK is across 7 Mile,
and
you know, all these people. But that Pershing neighborhood, man. The reason why Pershing is so successful is because of the people who live in those neighborhood, in that neighborhood, that still send their kids to Pershing. Because our neighborhood is really, it's extended now from Woodward and 7 Mile all the way down to Van Dyke and 7 Mile, and even beyond to Gratiot now, because people bypass Osborne okay, and a lot of those kids from 48205 come over to 48234 and go to Pershing. Mm. That's been a success. Yeah, we get some, Todd Bergen was from Benedictine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so Johnny Goston was able to get some kids. He, the late, great Johnny Goston.
R.I.P. to J.G.
R.I.P. Yeah. to J.G.
All the
fan coach. But Pershing has sustained itself. A.W. Canada was not a popular pick. But boy, oh boy, when they won the state championship, Keith Appling. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Keith Appling.
We talked about him prior to the show.
Keith is in prison. Russell Street. I knew his whole family. I'm really sad about that. It breaks my heart. But he is clearly, if we talk about basketball talents, we can't erase that. He's probably one of the five best players I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I've covered Sean Kemp when he was in high school.
Wait, hold on.
We got to save it for that.
You saying Keith is one of the five best players you have ever seen. Boy, you've seen them all.
Boy, it's tough. Boy, was tough. Keith was a killer. That 49 at the state championship in 2009 was
legit,
easy.
Legit
easy.
49.
It was easy. 49. When I tell you Keith Appling did it easy, I'm going to give you another name that people always forget, Winfred Walton. Now, Winfred Walton.
Played against him when he was at East Catholic his freshman year. I was a senior. We beat him, but he's a heck of a player.
Unbelievable,
monster.
Man. Well, you came out 94?
93.
Mm-hmm. Winfred Walton, man. Winfred Walton should have never gone to Syracuse. And y'all know the story about that, right? Mm-hmm. Izzo dropped a dime. He was pretty much guaranteed to go to state. He ends up at Syracuse. They make him retake his test in a room. And he didn't get that 27 that he got the first time. He got like a 14. Okay, whatever.
It's a big drop.
Okay, big drop.
Right.
NCAA flag. But that Pershing pride, when you come up on that second floor, it is the most intimidating thing ever for high school kids. I've seen great teams trim down, melt down to less, especially when you see Ray Kelsey coming in a referee and DeLon DeLittle and maybe one other ref come in there and he going to let you play. And that second floor gym is so special, man. Yeah. Will Robinson, the ghost of Real Rob. I think at night they do have some up and down. The ghosts play basketball. Mm-hmm. And that's another place, man, that is so special to me is that Pershing High School, and particularly that gym where you got all those banners of all those championships. And it just means a lot. It's a pride in that neighborhood. Khalil Felder, he sent his son over there, KJ. Mm-hmm. And he's over in China now, of course. I mean, Steve Smith. Steve grew up in our neighborhood, man.
Yeah, me and him graduated together.
Man, Smitty, let me tell you, Smitty was a little kid with long arms.
Now, I remember when Steve was like, in 1985, 86, he was like 6'1". And then all of a sudden, he sprouted.
Yeah, man.
6'6", 6'7", and the rest is history.
True story.
And but, yeah, I can remember going down to Cobo. Watching Steve, I think we were playing Southwestern, and nobody really recognized it. Then Southwestern had beat Pershing, but at the end of the game, he threw one off the backboard, caught it, and boom. And man, who was that guy?
Was that Callahan? Was that Callahan?
No, that was at Cobo.
That was the quarters. That was the quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals.
That was the quarterfinals. You know, I raced my butt up here from Fort Wayne, Indiana to see that, man.
And
finally got in.
You had Hunt with Southwestern. You had Steve Smith with
T. Wheeler.
T. Wheeler was gone.
He was gone. That's right.
He was gone. But you still had a great Southwestern team over there. And, of course, you had Steve Smith at Pershing. But you had mentioned something earlier when you say you covered the Lions and you covered the great Barry Sanders. But one of the greatest linemen that blocked for Barry Sanders, your guy, Mr. Lomas Brown.
That's right. Lomas Brown, man, very underrated in, when you think about him. Now, and I really want to talk about if you guys will allow me to, that Lions Den. Mm. But let me set it up. Lomas Brown.
Explain first, what the Lions Den is.
First of all, how do the Lions get a Lions Den? They ain't won a playoff. They don't won one playoff game in the last 50 years. Man. How is there a ring of honor for a team that has been this desolate?
Well, they've had great players. So the Den is for those great players. It's not necessarily for individual teams, is for the great players that we have had, and we've had several.
So,
you know,
I'm gonna let you go ahead. We got a guest in the house. I'm gonna let you go ahead with that,
and
let the guest go ahead and break that down.
Well, guys, let's have a moment of silence.
This is our third,
and this is the Tito's kicking in. Let's have a moment of silence for the Detroit Lions. Everybody, production staff included. And this was going to be long.
Is Bobby, what's your guy name?
Bobby Lane.
Is he, okay, Bobby Lane, you got to put him in the moment.
That's right. Hey, shout out.
Every Sunday, after the game, he posting Bobby Lane.
Bobby Lane. And that's the curse of Bobby Lane.
The curse of Bobby Lane.
Because you know the story. They traded him away because they fell in love with, what was it, Tobin Roat that was quarterback?
1957.
And they fell in love with Tobin Roat. And Bobby Lane, they
on
say,
his way out
threw,
the door.
Threw his stuff in the trash can, said, you'll never win another championship. And guess what? In 1957, he said that. It's what, 2021? Who can do that mental math that they teach? 64 years later,
right?
They haven't won a championship. So let's talk about Lomas Brown. 15-year NFL veteran, seven Pro Bowls. He was an All-Pro. And he's not in the Lions den. And I must tell you right now, Lomas Brown eventually will be a Hall of Famer. The Veterans Committee will get him in. I guarantee you.
So why isn't Lomas Brown in the Lions den?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, T. Martin. Beats the hell out of me. Because this past Sunday, and by the time you come on, it'll be a couple Sundays ago, Chris Spielman was inducted into the Lions Den. They did this whole thing, you know, with him reading off the teleprompter that he was getting. It was so emotional. And they're bamboozling us again. Chris Spielman played 11 years in the NFL. He had 4 Pro Bowl appearances. He's the all-time leading tackler for the Detroit Lions, but he pales in comparison to Lomas Brown. I read off Lomas Brown's statistics, those 7 Pro Bowls. They're both on the same team.
And the one playoff game that the Lions have won since 1956 or 57, Lomas Brown was a Pro Bowler on that team, blocking for the great Barry Sanders, 1994.
That's right. That's right. And see, we always fall for this. The Lions fool us all the time. Rod Wood, who is the current president of the Detroit Lions, he's doing it again. Guess who the special assistant is to the CEO?
Chris Spielman.
Guess who the general manager is? Brad Holmes. Brad Holmes didn't go on the field, you know, at halftime of the Lions Eagles game and say we plan on winning a Super. We're going to win a Super Bowl. It was Chris Spielman who was supposed to be this assistant to the CEO. He's really the GM. People need to understand that. He is the GM. I've heard even as early as last year, T. Martin and D. Webb, that he has been in the meeting rooms watching film with guys. If you're the assistant to the CEO, why are you in the room with coaches and players watching film?
Right. He's doing football operations.
Yes.
Right.
And therein lies the problem with the Detroit Lions. Bill Ford Jr. has been exiled. Sheila
Ford Hemp. Right.
She's running the show. It's her turn now. And Mama said, no. Martha said, hey, Bill, you're done because of the whole ill-fated Matt Millen experience, Tom Lewan, all those guys. They were this close to getting Kevin Colbert as the general manager of the Detroit Lions.
He runs Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yes. And Larry Lee, who's my dear fraternity brother, has been around the Lions.
Larry can play that bass.
Yeah, but see, he's a better football guy. He's working for the Fritz Pollard Alliance. But here's a guy who knows the Lion organization, was around when they were winning, played for the team, and they won't let him get a sniff. He's been away from the organization going on 20 years. And that's the problem with the Detroit Lions. They play on our emotions. This Chris Spielman thing, there were guys who were upset about Lomas Brown not getting in the Lions den. And I talked to some folks on Sunday, some former players. He's in there.
Lomas has to be in.
How in the fudge, I'm not going to curse say that word on air, but how in the fudge is Chris Spielman in before Lomas Brown? And therein lies our problem. The fans are going to continue to go out there. The fans get caught up in this emotion of Chris Spielman. People don't make enough noise. They don't do enough research. They don't hold the Lions accountable. And that's part of the problem. We fall in love with a Chris Spielman who people forgot. He left here to go to Buffalo to get paid. But all we talk about is his heart and how he played with a torn pectoral muscle. I remember covering them, and guys would say, he'd come away. And I have to say, Chris Spielman was a solid NFL player. I'm a fall short of saying he was great. Barry Sanders was great. But Chris Spielman was everything that this blue-collar stuff and rah-rah, all that stuff. But his stats were situations like, and you play some football, here's a tackle, Chris jump on that pile and get an assist. Okay, so he'd end up with 21 tackles. You should see some of them guys at the end of the game looking at stats. And even after wins, Benny Blades and all these guys and Kelvin Pritchard and those guys, they look at the stat sheet. Man, them only had no 21 tackles. They say stuff like that. You get them to talk like this. And that's the thing. We allow this stuff to happen as Lion fans, as sports enthusiasts, and they can get away with it. They get away. And now this dude is pretty much going to become a player personnel GM. Yes. And Brad Holmes is going to be held accountable for Jared Goff. Yeah. All of these things. And it's really sad to watch kind of like the undermining of a GM. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, Brad Holmes is not Martin Mayhew. Brad Holmes has some swagger to
Brad
him.
Brad Holmes built the L.A. Rams into a Super Bowl.
They went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
This is poor management.
Yes.
This is poor leadership. This is poor running of an organization.
Yes.
That has been in it
for 50
years plus, and are now and hadn't won a game all season.
Man.
Right. And so you got a guy, a blast from the past that you want to bring around, and now he's tiptoeing in and out of the football operations, by which he shouldn't be. And guess who's going to be left holding the bag?
I'm going to drink to that. I'm going to take a little sip, man. Because I'm going to tell you, man. I'm going to tell
you. Before we let you out of here, it's been great. We appreciate you coming by. Before we let you out of here.
Oh, man.
Eric Pate, we got our last segment, our 3-1-3 segment.
Let me see. Shouting out addresses, where you grew up at, you can name every address, zip codes. We got a 313 for you, brother.
Okay, let's roll.
This is a test.
Hold on, I gotta put my thinking cap on.
All right, now the three. Your favorite doughboys or dough girls of all time.
Man.
Three.
Lisa Blackburn. Rest in peace.
Heck of a player. R.I.P.
Lisa Blackburn, we retired her number when I was athletic director, the number 20. Mm-hmm. First girl, played at U of D. Oh,
okay. Came back and coached the team.
Yeah, legend. Came back, coached the team to a city championship.
Yep.
And really got done wrong at that point. That's a whole nother story. But this lady was the first real kind of revolutionary, evolved the game type player. Mm-hmm. In the Persian girls program that I saw with my own eyes. Okay. Spencer Haywood, man, Mr. Hardship himself.
Yeah.
He's one of my all-time favorites. This third one is gonna be tough, man.
Okay. Because you missed the Apple.
Yeah, I love Wimp. I love
Smith.
Wimp. I love Kevin Smitty. Willis. I love Kevin Willis. We call him Snake in the neighborhood. If you say Snake, he gonna turn around. That means you from his neighborhood. But I put Keith Appleton third, man. I saw that 49 with my own eyes.
Shout out to Keith.
Hey, man, I can't say free Keith Appleton. I gotta see what happens with this whole thing. Right. I feel bad for Keith. But he is my third, man. Keith Appleton, man, is about as tough as they come. So those are my three dough boys and dough girls. Blackburn, Haywood, Appleton.
Great list. Okay. All right, you got your three. Now we need a one. What's your favorite sports moment?
Famous sports moment. Man, it's a lot of them.
Five Super Bowls you covered.
I covered
Barry Sanders.
I covered Barry. I was there at that 2000 when Barry hit that 2097 against the Jets at the old Silver Dome. Danny Manning.
Yeah.
In the national championship in 88.
Wow.
And I also was at the 2019 New York Giants, Buffalo Bills Super Bowl 25.
But you got to name one.
I got to name one. Oh, man. Greatest sports moment, man. Why are you doing this to
it's
me,
It's the 313.
God,
Detroit.
And I love Tommy. You know, August 2nd, 1980, Hearns, Pepino, Cuevas. But if I had to pick one, I'd have to say 007, man, Vinnie Johnson. I was watching it on TV. Covering a sporting event, I'd have to say that 2019 field goal that goes wide left. Scott Norwood missed the field goal. I was there.
Covered
the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 25. Was that my first one? That was my first one. Mm-hmm. My daughter was 16 days old.
Wow.
And I kissed her before I went to go see her, gave her a little kiss, and headed on over to Tampa Stadium to watch that game.
Wide
so that's
left.
That's my biggest sports moment.
Wide left. All right, we're going to throw you a bone on this last one.
Throw me a diamond.
You talked a bit about, you know, people who have influenced you in your life and really some life-changing moments for you. Who are your three most influential Kappas?
Man, that's a tough one too, but I'm going to use hard times, my line. It was four of us, so they're going to represent one of them. Nick Parker, the ace from Redford High School baseball player. Mm-hmm. The deuce was Mike Bowman from Toledo St. John, a freshman at Pledge. And I was telling him at the smoker, Kappa don't, I was trying to eliminate people. I said, Kappa don't take no freshman, man. You got to leave. And he didn't listen to me. He stuck around and he stood next to me. And I was the trade club. And then Chris McGee from Cass Tech, 1977. I already told you, smoked that weed together. Yeah. And that was my tale, man, Wayne State University. So we had two guys from Wayne, one from U of D and one from Marygrove.
Okay.
So we represented the whole city. Hard times, that's my first most influential Kappa. If I think of some others, man, Ben Calloway was the undergraduate advisor. He taught at Central. Central High School. You know, he's a counselor here. And it's ironic that we're here and you asked me this question. He was the undergrad advisor. I was not a good guy. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could have told him before he died how much he meant to me.
Wow.
And I think the third person, man, it's that whole line of 83 at Alpha Beta, the sophisticated gents. Lamar Leverett, who grew up on Orange Lawn in Wyoming, went to DePores. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Swift, as I mentioned him earlier. Derek Treadwell, Joe Lloyd, who, like I said, rest in peace, he was an ex-con who they put online who threatened to kill all the brothers in 83 when he was online, and he was capable of doing it.
Right,
Parnell
right.
Johnson, Derek Treadwell from Mumford, Parnell Johnson from Mumford, and who else was on that line? Mike Mayberry.
Okay.
Mike Mayberry was a deuce. He was from Cass Tech, and all those guys made me who I am in this organization. And I love them. They were hard on me. And back then, you can whoop a little ass and do it in public. And, I mean, I respected those guys. I'm glad that shit is over. Trust me, if I'd have dropped, I'd have never pledged this again. Never. And kids out there, they're not doing it as hard as we used to. But need I digress. But that's it, man. Those are my most three influences. I broke the rules a little bit because I used whole lines.
You did.
But that's right. It. And all my undergrads out there, I love these undergrads, man. They mean a lot to me.
That's
thanks.
One thing, just to piggyback real quick before we end the segment, man. You know, I love the community service EP does. He always supporting the Nukes. I think he posted something a couple of weeks ago. He was doing the step show somewhere. I don't know if it's at Wayne State.
Down the way.
Or whatever. So he's always around with the Greeks, the Qs, the Alphas. You're going to see EP around. That's what I love about the brothers. So, hey. Thanks for coming to the brown couch.
Eric Pate, thanks a lot.
Brown couch.
Let me raise my glass, my red cup.
Thanks a
and
lot.
I got, red for the cap.
And I got some Tito's and Crayon in here, man. They give you a drink if you come on this show. So shout out to the Qs, and I have yet to meet a Q that doesn't have gold boots and that's a write-in. Okay? Shout out to them.
Appreciate you coming. To all our listeners, you can catch the Brown Couch Bros on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere you get your podcasts. New episodes every Monday. Check us out on Instagram. Like us. Rate us so we can come back next week.